In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
EMS Office Hours. This is Jim Hoffman. Josh Knapp, my usual co-host, is not with us today, but I do have a special guest with us that's going to, I think, talk about a pretty cool topic. I do want to remind everybody that this episode of EMS Office Hours is sponsored by EMS Manager. So check them out. It's at emsmanager.net. You can get a free trial of their innovative and easy-to-use EMS employee scheduling and management software. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, guys. Our Twitter handle is at EMS Safe. And get us on iTunes. I'm pushing for iTunes to follow us there and to read a review. And you can go to EMS4.us/MedicTunes. And you can go there and subscribe to the podcast and leave some comments, which will help us out over on iTunes as well. But today we're talking a little bit about online paramedic training and getting a certification online and a little bit of a twist when it comes to that. And I have my guest online, Evan Feuer. Right, Evan? Is that you with me? Is that the way you say your last name?
Yep, exactly. Perfect.
All right, so Evan, why don't you real quick, I guess, give a quick overview about yourself, I suppose, and let the listeners know what you're about, and then we can talk a little bit about the training that tonight's show is about.
Okay, well, hello, everybody. My name's Evan Feuer. I'm a 20-plus-year paramedic. I spent the vast majority of the years working in New Jersey, although I've been in some other states prior to that. And in the last chunk of years, I spent some time overseas. I worked for the Department of Defense in Iraq for a while as a paramedic, and I did some other overseas projects. And that's kind of how I came into this. And I was doing some online education, continuing education standard stuff, and that's where this kind of started to evolve out of.
Well, the reason why, I mean... this is the type of thing where I'm going to be honest with you, Evan. A lot of the programs that I've seen when it comes to becoming a paramedic online, I'm sort of leery of the quality of education that attendees and students can get, since they're not attending a physical classroom sort of instruction and being able to ask questions as they go along and things like that. And it's not, I guess, maybe not the structure is something that I see that isn't always there with, a lot of times with these online programs. But I know what you're going to talk to us about tonight is something that's a little more structured. It's more of a hybrid type of a program. And it's geared mostly for, I guess, international candidates that want to become U.S. paramedics and it's sort of geared towards them. So what do you have, like, a key difference between, let's say, what you are involved with and what you might get, let's say, from some of the online programs that are out there right now?
Much about all the other programs. What I will tell you is Meditraining International, in conjunction with Crowder College, Missouri, the program that we offer, well, first of all, to call it an online program is probably a little bit of a misnomer. I think it's probably it's better described as a hybrid program. So, and also for people that are think, oh, okay, I'll do an online program, I sit in front of the computer a couple hours a week, and knock out a quick paramedic certification.
Yeah.
You know, that's absolutely not what this is. This is actually the opposite. This is really for somebody who's very strong academically, a strong independent learner. This really isn't a cakewalk. It accommodates people's schedules and accommodates distance and geography, but it's a It's not a walk in the park program. So there are some programs out there, and I will mention, and actually, to have kind of programs that are online for initial paramedic certification that kind of make it easy to walk around, or kind of that walk in the park type of course, starting January 1st, 2014, when the requirements for COAMC kind of go into effect for everybody. You're really not going to be able to do that anymore, because the requirements for running a course, a course that'll be accepted by National Registry, are very rigid. So we can't really bypass all those requirements.
Okay.
So I can tell you the course that we run at MTI and Crowder is that we basically, if you look at any paramedic course, first of all, just anyone that's out there. Generally, there's a couple different pieces of any course. There's classroom learning, and usually the classroom learning is backed up by some classroom skills training, and that learning is backed up by hospital time, which is ultimately backed up by field time. And then usually you go back and forth between all those different types of learning environments, one building on the other. Now, that's a traditional course, and they work very well. And the problem with it, and I don't want to say a problem, but for some people it's a problem, is that you have somebody who's an adult who either has a family or a job and responsibilities to attend a traditional program like that. And I'm sure you'll remember, if your memory is good enough, when you went to paramedic school back in the day, that and it was certainly that for me. It basically took over my life for 2 years.
Right. Oh yeah.
And it's very and so for somebody who has a family or a job and other obligations, entering this field at the paramedic level is almost prohibitive. Just forget about the money. Just the lifestyle. So what we tried to put together here was looked at the different pieces of what it takes to make a paramedic course. And is there a way to do that to make that more accommodating to people who are far away from the school or just they can't really have that flexible schedule because of job or other responsibilities. So what we ended up doing was we looked at the hourly requirements. And the biggest single piece of the hours in any paramedic course is the classroom portion. So what we ended up doing was we took that out, and that's what we separated out, and that's the part that's online.
Right. Okay.
So that's the biggest piece. And I'll tell you, in the Crowder program, it's all the didactic portion of a paramedic course. It's 27 weeks long. And even that period of time, that's a very short period of time.
So is that 27 weeks, like in a row, like 5 days a week, or is it self-paced somehow? How do they do that? Are they live classes, or is it recorded, or a mixture?
Actually, it's all of the above of everything you just said. The way it's structured is, well, first of all, the overall course is based on the accelerated paramedic program that Crowder's been doing successfully for years. They have, with the program, they have close to 100% pass rate with National Registry. But that being said, it takes a very certain type of student to do this. So somebody who's very motivated and very focused.
I think that's an important component there for the people looking to do it is not to go into, I mean, I even with regular college courses, you can't go into that type of education environment and think you're going to sort of just stroll through the content and, you know, pick up on everything. You know, you want it to be so that it is challenging to the candidate taking the class.
Oh, absolutely. This is absolutely challenging. I can tell you, just 5 minutes before we started this program, I was speaking with one of our students in Argentina who was calling me with some questions about her this week's assignment. So the way it works is you asked about kind of live and broken up. So what they do is they use this online learning platform. So everybody logs into this classroom.
At the same time?
No. Okay. Because we have people in we have, our course, we have our biggest single block of students are in Ireland, but we have students in South America, in the Middle East, in the Philippines. So because of time zone differences, it's not reasonable to expect everybody to log on at the same time.
Okay, right, okay.
So there's an online portal that you log on to, and weekly we upload, when I say we, it's actually the Crowder program, they upload a narrated PowerPoint of all the chapters that are going to be on this for the week. So just think about it. When you go to a regular paramedic class, you have an instructor standing in front of the class, a PowerPoint on the screen, and he goes through it and he talks about the PowerPoint. So the PowerPoint that he uploads is basically just that. It's the PowerPoint screen. Then in the corner, there's a bubble of a picture of him talking about the topics on the PowerPoint. And he goes through the chapters for the week, start to finish. So I can tell you, I was actually just today looking at this week's PowerPoints, which go live in a couple hours, and it's close to 2.5 hours of lecture material. 2.5, maybe 3 hours of straight lecture material. Also on that portal is the entire text and workbooks in ebook format, so the students can look at it either on a computer or on their Kindle or iPad or something like that.
And now the books are, I guess they're based on what books do you guys use, if you don't mind me asking, what textbooks are you using?
Oh, absolutely. We use the Nancy Caroline Emergency Care in the Street series.
Okay.
So it's and this is all peer-reviewed, pre-accepted stuff. And this is actually the Nancy Caroline material, as I understand it, is the most commonly used text in paramedic programs in the U.S.
Okay.
Across the world. So it's standard of what we're using everywhere anyway. So they have to read the chapters, they have to do the workbook, they watch the lectures, and then they have two posting dates a week, or like homework dates, which is Wednesday night and Sunday night. And they use Eastern Standard Time midnight as the due date for that week's projects, just as a guideline.
Right.
So we have two homework assignments for the week. So the first one, well, it might be, write an essay about whatever given topic, or research whatever the different things are, but in addition to that, there's a posting board. On the posting board, every student is required to, and it changes from week to week, put one or two original posts, one or two paragraphs each, about the given topics that you're going over that week. And then they have to. So there's either one or two required posts per week, and then usually it's four responses to other people's posts that are about topics different than the post that you put up.
Okay. You might be leading up to this, but I'm wondering, two things actually. One thing is the questions, like if a student has questions. Is that something that's done sort of in a forum type of an atmosphere with the instructors, or is it emailed, or how does that work?
Well, there's three. Well, actually, there's four basic ways that it's handled. One is on the forum. They post questions on the forum, and maybe the students answer them, or the instructor answers. But the instructor's all over the forum, so we answer stuff on the forum, and actually, that's probably a great way to do it, because if a student sees a question there, or writes a question, it's likely that somebody else has the same question.
Sure, right, yeah, exactly.
So, and the forum is one way of answering the questions. Another way of answering the questions is some of the students will email the instructor directly, and he can email them back directly. Some of the students interact directly with one another, and that's the same way they would interact with in a regular class. Hey, what did you think of this chapter? And they kind of hash out some of this stuff. And in addition to that, the instructor for this course, he runs a weekly live webcam Q&A session.
Okay.
So, and it's a different time, so come different time zones, but, and he posts, and he records the Q&A session. So you can log in live and go through the Q&A with him. And if for any reason you can't make that Q&A, the recording of it is posted up within a portal. So you can review what other people's questions were.
Right. And like you said, most of the time questions end up being sort of the same. And if you missed it, you can probably see that happen. So now on the forum, the students are able to sort of have like their own sort of, I guess, study group type thing going on to build off each other.
Absolutely. They have little study groups that go on. Now, but they also have to do papers and projects, the same as with any other paramedic course. And they also have quizzes and tests. They have to submit drug profiles with some kind of regularity. I forget the exact. And all that gets submitted online. So, again, like I said in the beginning, this isn't for somebody who's motivated to do a course quickly and efficiently with minimal travel and interruption in their schedule.
Yeah.
So you can do
I guess prompting. You don't have somebody there, I guess, kind of directing you step by step by step. You get the layout of what you have to do, and you've got to do it.
Well, I'll tell you that, like, I was looking over this week's, they're in week two right now. So he put out two videos this week. One is the 2.5 hour or so narrated PowerPoints, but he put out one before that that was 7 or 8 minutes long that's also posted online that says, it's him saying, okay, this is how we did last week. These are some of the questions that came up last week. Somebody had a hard time logging in, and let me show you, and he does screenshots showing where the problem was and what they were clicking on wrong. And and so they go through all that. And in addition to that, spaced out like you would in a regular class, there's quizzes and tests. So, and they have to sign an honor code thing before they take any quiz and test.
That they're not going to cheat or do open book type thing, you mean?
Exactly. And everything is timed also. You can do it any time. So like this week, they have a 100 question test that's coming up next week at the beginning of, starts at beginning of week three. And they have the full week. They can do it any time in week three. But it has to be done by midnight Sunday night, week three. And they have to make sure that they have up to a two-hour block of time to do the quiz, because they have 2 hours allotted for taking the, I'm calling the quiz, it's really a test. They have 2 hours to do the test. And once they log in and they sign off on the honor code and stuff, well, the clock starts, they have 2 hours to do the test.
Okay.
So it kind of runs. So that's the didactic portion, and that runs for 27 weeks. So this is also a credit-granting program through a college. So the course in total issues 36 credits. So the didactic portion alone runs 18 credits.
Through the college, they'll get how many credits? Is it 18 or?
18, well, it's 36 in total. So the didactic portion by itself is 18 credits.
Okay.
And actually, when they're done with course, if they want to combine this with some EMS management course and history and English and a couple other odds and end courses, they can come up with a degree in emergency services with that.
I'm assuming that's going to be longer than the 27 weeks that.
Okay, well, the whole course isn't 27 weeks.
The didactic is.
Exactly.
Right.
So at the end of the didactic, and I'll use this semester as an example, they started on June 4th, I think it was, and it finishes on, off the top of my head, I think the end date is December 6th. So, and once they finish that, then they're going to have there's a little bit of break for Christmas time. And then there's the next two portions of it. The next two portions are in-classroom skills training, which is 2 weeks, 6 days a week, and they're long days. And there's two ways that you can do that. Now, we have an affiliation, Medic Training International, with a training center based out of Dublin, Ireland, for instance. So we have 14 or 16 students from Ireland. So what we're doing is actually, they have a training center. There's a training center there, an EMS training center. So what we're actually doing is we're sending over several instructors from the United States. They have an equipment list of what they have to provide for us when we arrive there. And we're going to provide for them all the in-classroom skills training there in Dublin for that group of students. And that's going to be everything from, you know, review of all the BLS stuff, onboarding and CPR and bag valve manipulations.
And is that type of thing something that is a normal sort of process, or are you doing that because you have a large block of people from that country or from that area, and you're trying to, I guess, accommodate?
Well, yeah, well, we're accommodating that group there. Okay. But I can tell you, this course has 30 people in it. So the other 24, 26, the other 15 people, more or less, what they do is, as soon as the semester starts, everybody goes to Missouri, and they spend 2 weeks at the college, at Crowder College, doing 2 weeks of skills training. And we do all of that at the college. And Crowder College, actually, they have a state-of-the-art training center. They have all of the high-fidelity SimMen and ambulance simulators and monitors and defibrillators. They have, actually, if you go check out crowder.edu, check out the EMS department's website, they have a fantastic facility. So they all go there, and for 2 weeks, and it's good 10, 11-hour days. Every single day, we're doing the skills training, reviewing everything. And then at the end of that two-week period, then they transition right away into the hospital and field training. So that bunch from Ireland, they're going to come and they're going to meet up with the group at the end of that two-week period, because they will have done their training already in Ireland.
Okay.
Everybody meets in Missouri mid-January, and they go into their hospital and field training. So just like any other paramedic class, they're going to have to do ER time and OR time and ICU time and burn unit time, and then they're going to have to do a lot of ride time. So, and they have up to 12 weeks to complete the required hospital and field time training, and to meet the national registry requirements, it's give or take. I don't have the numbers in front of me. It's about 500 hours.
They have to get those hours within that 12-week time frame.
Correct. So again, not a walk in the park. They're going to be 6 days a week, if not 7 days a week, doing 12-hour shifts on the ambulance and the ER like that. In that period of time, they are going to have some days where they're going to have to go to the college and do ACLS, National Registry Review, National Registry Skills Session Test Prep, you know, prepping for the skills training, mm-hmm. or skills testing, rather. And they're going to be doing all of that while at the same time doing all the ride time and field time. So it's going to be a really busy 3 months.
Yeah.
And at the end of that 3 months, they sit for national registry, and then they go back to their home country. And for the domestic students, for the U.S. students, they can actually test in Missouri where the course is being given, but they also, since it's the domestic students, they can actually take the national registry approved course. They can go take that exam any state in the country.
So for domestic students, they don't have to be from Missouri. If they're from, you know, a different state, and they're just looking for the national registry certification, they can take this course. But the difference, the key thing, I guess, is that they have to do the skills and the training through the college and through in Missouri.
And the reason for that is, really, the college wants to be able to oversee all the skills training. If you outsource that to okay, you can go back to wherever you came from and do your ride time there. It's difficult to oversee because, you know, when you're in the ER, you have to do certain skills. You have, you know, how do they know that the students are actually even doing them?
Yeah.
So that way they can have kind of direct supervision for that. And that way they can also guarantee that they're going to have a higher success rate. So people who actually really work their way through this program are going to have very high success rates. Again, but it's going to be, it's not a walk in the park either.
Yeah, it's going to be work. Now, what do you guys do, or have you had a challenge at all with, like, language barriers or even, I guess, you know, the way different words mean different things for different places, and any issues with that have you found?
Well, like you said right now, we have some prerequisites because this is a college-based course. So you have to have a high school degree, high school diploma, or equivalent. You have to be fluent in English, both spoken and written. And you also have to be an EMT or equivalent. There are some countries where they call it like advanced ambulance technician, and they have similar names.
Mm-hmm.
But those are all hard, fast requirements. So I guess the
credentialing process before they even get into a program like this is fairly stringent, where they've got to provide the, you know, I guess, the documentation and credentials and all that for the things that you've mentioned, right?
Well, I can tell you, one of the services Mediterranean International provides is we help with the whole visa, because they're here actually on they'll be here on an official student visa issued by the State Department. So we help them kind of walk through that whole process, which... anything with the government is required by the paperwork and a little bit of patience. So we walk them through that whole process, which also requires fingerprinting and background checks, and they have to have their immunizations done beforehand. We have to have, all these different guarantees that they're not going to just disappear once they come into the United States. And all that's taken care of. But also as it relates to the clinical aspect or the educational aspect, all foreign EMTs, once they come to the United States, part of that 2 weeks of skill training is going to be a review of BLS and a review of BLS for the U.S. standards. Because there are, you know, it's funny, in most of the Anglo countries, England, Ireland, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, they use the same text. They use an ANSI Caroline curriculum.
But they do
make some minor changes. So once they come here, at the end of that 2 week period of skills training, everybody actually has to sit and take the National Registry BLS exam.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, a lot of paramedic schools do that anyway, right? Even with your physical, your traditional paramedic program, a lot of them, the first, you know, week or so of school is sort of a quick BLS refresher and checking your BLS skills and all that anyway. So it's not really that much different when it comes to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of what we're doing is redirecting some of the nuances of what they may have learned in England or Ireland to accommodate what the standard is here in the United States, because the expectation is everybody has to meet the standard.
Right. Yeah. You know what, I got a couple of questions, Evan, but I just want to quickly talk about the sponsorship real quick for a minute, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
and just remind everybody that we are being sponsored by EMS Manager, and encourage people to go check out their software for themselves. It really does take the chore of employee scheduling and management of EMS providers, and it makes it easy to set up and easy to maintain and manage as well. So the thing with EMS Manager also is that it is a mobile web app. It's accessible from smartphones and other mobile devices. It's easy to use. Web interface, you can get it anywhere you are on the World Wide Web. So managers and staff can both use it. They can oversee the schedule. They can manage the schedule, make requests or changes to schedules from pretty much anywhere as long as they have an internet connection. And my favorite part, of course, is the fact that the pricing is based on the size of the organization. So it's always affordable. And because it's web-based, like I just mentioned, the software is located in the cloud. And that means that there's no additional IT costs that an agency is going to have to worry about. And it's always free training. There's always free tech support and free system software updates. So if you're thinking about getting an employee scheduling management software, go check this out. You can get a free customizable trial of EMS Manager. It's over at emsmanager.net. One last thing. I want to thank them again for sponsoring EMS Office Hours, but also for sponsoring a lot of your other favorite EMS programs from the ProMed Network. And EMS Manager is a proud supporter of EMS providers and managers through this sponsorship. So show your support for them, guys. Go check them out. Take a few minutes. Go over to emsmanager.net. It's from LabTech, and it's for online employee scheduling and workforce management. So visit emsmanager.net. And if you go there, of course, tell them that Jim sent you from EMS Office Hours, and give them a shot if you're thinking about something like this. It's a really cool and very, very intuitive software. So go ahead and check that out. I want to give a quick hi to John in the chat room. I see him there, and also Ample Medic is in the chat as well. Chat room's a little slow tonight. I'm not sure why. I guess maybe the weather's getting warmer, and we're getting people not looking to log into the chat, but that's okay. Evan, one thing, I guess, a couple of questions I guess I wanted to ask you. I don't want to get into the cost of it. I suppose it's, I don't really want to have you divulging how much a course like this would cost. But you had mentioned about like with a larger group from one country, how you're going to send some instructors there to help them with the skills before they come to the States to do some of the other clinicals and skill training here. Is that sort of a that sort of circumstance, does that end up costing those students more money because you're sending instructors there and have to pay for flights and room and board and all that good stuff?
It actually ends up costing the group at each individual student less.
Oh, yeah?
And the reason for that is, let's say we didn't do that and all of those students had to come here. That means 2 weeks that they have to stay here in the United States, where they wouldn't have to do that otherwise. And just for being, there's a cost attributed to that. They have to eat, they have to have housing, transportation, and there's cost attributed to all that. It's much cheaper for us to send two people over there, and do the training there. Absolutely.
Okay. And I mean, I guess something that you're going to, I guess you might come up against and that I guess other online sort of even these, a lot of them are similar sort of hybrid programs where there's X amount of weeks of, online training, whether it's recorded or live or a mixture of the two. And then the physical hands-on, portion of it where you're doing clinical training and skills and all that. I guess that you sort of see the argument about that not being as effective as somebody who's sitting in the classroom and watching the presentations and being able to ask questions as they come up and have sort of a rapport with an instructor or instructors and whatnot and fellow students and things like that. And that's a little bit more difficult, I guess, when you're doing it online or distance sort of learning. And I'm just wondering, is there a key talking points that you guys use to sort of dispel that myth or dispel that argument at all?
Well, I can tell you that the research actually doesn't hold up that belief. Now, that being said, it has to be interactive two-way learning, which is something that both MTI and Crowder offer. Now, if it's just unidirectional learning, where they just have a video and you watch a video and you answer a question and that's it, but there has to be interactive two-way learning. And to be honest with you, I teach a paramedic class right now in Philadelphia. And, I have students that come in and they sit down and they put their head down on the desk. They're there, they get marked as present, and they're not really interactive.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because I can actually see, and I remember going through paramedic class and you know, people that were in the classroom that would do that type of thing and sort of concern themselves with the content later on, you know.
Right. And now with this format, you can't do that. You can't put your head down because all the software tracks how many times you're out there. We track how much your work and your interactiveness. And we require a certain level of interactiveness and posting of original material, which requires that level of interactiveness that in a regular class, if you're sitting there but you're not really interactive, it's the same requirement isn't you're not being held accountable to.
Right.
So when you have bidirectional learning like this, the outcomes are actually the same or better than in a traditional classroom.
Yeah, you were saying before that the success rate for National Registry is, like you said, would you say almost 100% or 100%?
Crowder's success rate for their traditional accelerated program is close to 100%. But this is basically the same program. So if you're the type of student that you need that physical proximity to your teacher, you need to be able to look at somebody in the face. And there are some people that they feel that they need that. This probably isn't for them. But if you're a strong learner and you're strong at time management, and you're motivated, this is absolutely really the platform for you. But you need to have that personality.
And somebody asked in the chat room about, I think we sort of covered it already, but like individual systems themselves. You know, a lot of places when you apply from one state to another, they look at the program or the hours that you were in class and all that type of stuff before they give you, let's say, reciprocity or things like that. Is there something, I guess, that you guys do to sort of show the hours and the content and all that type of stuff so that people can go to their state and say, yeah, at National Registry, I went to this program, and these are the hours, these are the content and all that type of stuff. Is that sort of what people normally do? I'm not sure what experiences you might have had with people from other states coming in. I mean, have they expressed any sort of difficulties at all?
Well, let me tell you a couple things. So right now we're credentialed Crowder through COPS, which is the new national standard for credentialing for paramedic programs. So they meet all those criteria. One of the things that they do is they use something called FISDAP. I don't know if you're familiar with
it.
For anyone who's listening, it's FISDAP.net, FISDAP. And it's a tracking system for all the skills that you do while you're in paramedic school, everything. Every patient contact, you put an arrow in. Anytime you do a drug, give the drug, that's input. You have to look at your EKG interpretations. Your scripts have to be put in. All of your, your simulation time is all put in. All your hours and patient contact are all tracked and fizzed out. And it creates a permanent record of not just your hours, but also all your skills training and patient interactions. And that's there. It's in the class, and it's there ever. So that's what is being used as part of the accreditation process. But going forward, if you have to show that you're, if you're going for reciprocity and what your hours are, it's all there. Is that.
Okay.
But beyond that, I can tell you from state to state and country to country, the whole reciprocity thing is complex. It would be understating it.
Yeah.
So most states, except National Registry, to one extent or another, They either outright accept national registry in exchange for a card, for a certification, or, for example, I work in New Jersey. New Jersey accepts national registry, but you have to have some more ride time hours, than what the minimum credential limits are under national registry for testing.
Right.
So you have to have some more hours. So there's little nuances from state to state.
And that's just meaning the state's guidelines. I mean, this program is to give people the basic hours that's required by national registry to get their certification. But if a state requires more didactic or more clinical, you'd have to do that, you know. But it can get your foot in the door, though.
Absolutely. Well, this program exceeds the national registry standards. Now, if you need to, I'll give you an example. The students that we have from Ireland. In Ireland, they're required to have, in Ireland, they do accept national registry, the U.S. for reciprocity, with a few caveats. And one of them is they have to have 1,275 post-graduation internship hours. That's after already becoming a paramedic, which is huge.
Right.
So, and that's one of the things that Paramedic Training International does. We help set them up with those post-graduation internship hours. That's one of the services we offer. So there are a little nuances from country to country, but for the most part, most countries do accept the U.S. reciprocity, although there was a time where, they say you were a paramedic in England, you wanted to come to work in the United States, you could submit a transcript, they called it for equivalency, and it would be reviewed to see that you had equivalent training in any areas that you were lacking in. You could take a couple classes in those areas, cover the gaps, and then you can take registry. It doesn't work like that anymore.
Hmm.
So pretty much now, in order to practice in the United States, you have to have graduated a complete U.S.-based National Registry Paramedic course that's COAMC approved, period. That's it. And the only people that are exempted from that are current state paramedics. So if you're an old-timer New Jersey paramedic who only has a New Jersey, so you decide you want to move to Wyoming and you need to take National Registry, even though you took your paramedic course, 15 years ago and didn't have that credentialing, you're still grandfathered in as a state paramedic. That's the only exception. So a lot of our students and a lot of the interest that we're getting are from, we have a couple people who are married to U.S. citizens. And they want to come to the States and work because their wife is American. One of our guys is a British guy who's married to an American author, even living in London for 15 years, and he wants to move to Alabama. So even though he's been working as a paramedic for pretty much as long as I am, he needs to go through a program. He needs a credential, so he's going through a program.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you, Evan, it's very interesting program you got going on here. Very, very interesting. I think very, it sounds very in depth and rigid when it comes to, the content, what's expected of the candidates. I guess you get the people that argue nowadays about every paramedic program should be 2 years and should be an associate's degree. But I think, like you mentioned early on, it's not always feasible for people who have families and have a lot of other responsibilities, but they want to get into EMS, So I guess this is a very good option. In fact, like you said as well, they are getting, some college credits for attending the program.
Yeah, absolutely. And also for some of our overseas students, some of the countries, they require a kind of a university component that strictly certification classes don't qualify for some of the countries' reciprocity. So for this group and for some of those students, this ends up being a really kind of a perfect program for them.
And so the people that from that are international are taking this class, are they doing it because they're looking to come and work in the United States, or is it something they're doing because wherever they are requires the National Registry, certification to meet certain standards where they are? Is that what's their main drive, do you find?
Well, it's kind of a mixed bag, and I would say that only a handful of people are planning on coming to the United States, and of those, it's two or three. Those are people that are already married to Americans that are already that may be coming here anyway, but they need to but they want to work as paramedics here. So really, the goal for these people mostly isn't to come here. Now, I can tell you from a group of the people that we have coming from the Middle East, there's a lot of American oil companies and Department of Defense contractors and various places in the Middle East. And their preference is to hire, for certain types of jobs, they like hiring paramedics for oil platforms and clinic work and stuff, that, or even just EMS in places like Saudi Arabia. If you have an American National Registry, that's a that's a valuable certification that pays particularly well. So if somebody, and it, for some reason it just so happens that there's a lot of Filipinos, Filipino EMTs that work in Middle East countries as EMTs. And so there's a big interest in that population to get U.S. National Registry, not to be in the United States, but to go back to the Middle East and work for either U.S. oil companies or U.S. defense contractors,
right. Okay. Yeah.
Paramedics. And there's a bunch of other, several Anglo countries where, like England, again, for example, in England, it's a paramedic school, is a 3-year university program, and it costs, I forget the exact cost of the average program, actually, it's something like £11,000 per year, which is like $15,000 or $18,000 a year for a 3-year program. But if you take a U.S. National Registry, you can do reciprocity, and actually ends up being shorter and cheaper for them to do that, even when you factor in travel and housing.
Right. It's very interesting. I'll tell you, I think it would be pretty cool just for the field training people and the clinical rotations, and get people from other countries coming in, being a paramedic student and going through the program and being on the ambulance and running calls and things like that. It must be a difference for them to see the way the system even operates as opposed to where they are, even, you know. It must be interesting to sort of see that interaction, especially very beginning when they get going, you know, and start to see the differences in how we respond and you know, what we do for patients and all compared to what they might be, exposed to. You know,
absolutely. And it's funny because we have some of our students, they already call themselves paramedics, and they're really, but what is called a paramedic in other country really is probably analogous to an EMT who has IVs.
Okay.
Not even really an EMTI.
Right.
Which actually we're now calling AMTs, advanced EMTs.
Yeah.
But for instance, we have one of our students from Argentina. She's actually being sponsored through a company that sells ambulances and rescue equipment in South America, with the idea of her learning U.S. style paramedicine. I mean, that's
in
South America.
Okay, cool. I mean, listen, I think that it's interesting. I think there's a lot of opportunities and different avenues that this could really go, especially if you talk about the international component of it, you know. So people can go check out medictraininginternational.com and see what it's all about there. Recommend it to people that you know that might be interested in it and might be interested in doing some sort of an online course. It might be worth their while to investigate it. And if you ever come across somebody at a convention or in your travels from overseas that looking to do it, it's a good a good place to send them to get them started and get them on the path, you know, to get that training. So, Evan, I appreciate you joining me tonight. Great insights and great information. Anything you want to last comments you want to make before we close out?
Yeah, if you don't mind, if you guys go to our website, medictraininginternational.com, like it sounds, you can fill out a request for information form and you instantly be emailed an information packet. But if you want to contact me directly and have some specific questions, the packet's pretty comprehensive, answers a lot of the questions, the regular questions that people have. But if you want to contact me directly, my email is Evan, E-A-N, at medictraininginternational.com. Feel free to shoot me a line and answer any questions that you have. And even if you're Medic Training International, we basically handle the international students. But if you're a domestic student and you have a question about this, feel free to contact me directly. I can answer questions and put you in touch with the people you need to be in touch with.
All right, Evan, I appreciate it. I guess you're welcome back on the show anytime. We can talk about other topics and look forward and hope there's some significant success with this. And I'll keep an eye out for any of my members and visitors to my website that might be looking for this type of training and send them your way for sure.
Fantastic.
All right. All right, have a good week.
And listen, it's always great talking to you. And stay safe. Everybody stay safe out there.
All righty. All right, everybody, that is it for tonight's show. I appreciate you popping in. I do want to give a quick shout-out to some of the new Twitter followers. I want to say hi to FDMedic147. Chris M. Kev is following me, U911 as well. Brevin Fisher, Esquire, as a matter of fact, say hi to him. Bruce Hoffman is also following me on Twitter now. There's no relation. Global Medic, Medic Marathoner, and finally, Real Deal EMS, which I'm going to think we're going to have them on a podcast pretty soon as well. I'm a little intrigued by their profile there on Twitter also. So thank them all for following me on Twitter. You can follow me as well. It's EMS Safe on Twitter. My Facebook page is facebook.com/ EMS Professional. And go check out Evan's site at medictraininginternational.com. Go give them a look and, see what we've been talking about tonight. And I'd love to hear your comments. Look at their site, what we talk about, and post your comments below in the show notes right here on Blog Talk Radio or over on the blog at emsofficehours.com. And I'd love to hear your comments on tonight's show and, what you think about the website and the program and get some feedback. And let me know what you guys think also. That's it for me. John, thank you for joining me in the chat room, Ample Medic. I think this is your first time with us in the chat, if I'm not mistaken. I appreciate your comments as well there. John is off tonight. He is at a function, so he could not be with us. But that's okay. We had Evan pop in and give some great information, so I appreciate that. All right, that's it. Until next week, as always, stay safe. If you have any questions, comments, be sure to send them over to me. It's jhoff@emsseo.com. And next week, Jim Hoffman, EMS Office Hours. Stay safe.